Game On. On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight on the day that Padraig Harrington was finally back in the winner's enclosure. A 7-year absence from the PGA Tour, at least. I know he had that win in December in Indonesia, but this was something altogether different. An incredible final round at the Honda Classic, beating American Daniel Berger in the most dramatic of playoffs. We'll hear from the man himself in just a few minutes' time. Gary Murphy standing by on the line. We've Donal Lennon on rugby after Ireland's brilliant win against England yesterday. Eamon Dunphy on a very busy weekend of football. And Westmead's Gary Connaughton on a hugely impressive comeback against Kildare in between the posts yesterday. As always, Alan Cawley's with me on a Monday. You're very welcome, Alan.
Thanks very much, Hugh.
What about that man?
Unbelievable. Unreal.
I tell you what, the whole sports department just down tools today.
The country, I think.
And just glued into that. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, well, I was watching it last night and I put a tweet up yesterday morning, Hugh. A huge day of sport. All the best to the Irish rugby team and, of course, the Padraig Harrington. And little did I know that come a day later, because I was watching it last night and he finished up the day. He wasn't great at all yesterday when they finished up. I think he played 8 holes.
The break came at the right time for him.
Yeah, exactly. Because if I had to carry on, he was nowhere. But then for him to come out and do what he'd done, and the 4 birdies, it was just unbelievable today. And he gets... I actually think people have been very disrespectful to Padraig Harrington, Hugh, over the years. To achieve what that man has done, 3 majors.
I said it inside to the lads, to Colm and to Al. For me, for my muck, and I don't want to put words in Gary's mouth, I'll ask him about this, he is Ireland's greatest ever sportsman.
Well, this is what I was just about to say to you. I don't have him down as the greatest, but I certainly have him in the top 3, along with...
Here's a text in, just in. 51552, by the way. Hi, Hugh. I know you said P. Harrington is Ireland's greatest sports person. What about Katie Taylor or Paul Brady in handball, who has dominated the sport internationally for over 10 years, is recognised as the greatest ever, and was the first Irish man to break onto and dominate the US pro circuit? Yeah, I mean, obviously, those two names are...
They're amazing, but if you look at the competition that Harrington has, Hugh, compares to that, and no disrespect to them, but that's surely you're judging it on that. How hard is it to win a major with the standard of golf that there is? And he's won 3. And Barry McIlroy, I don't think we'll ever see another Irishman get even close to 3.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. That's to put it in context.
So there you go. And it's just I think people have written him off. Now, I don't think he's helped himself with some of the things and changing things and the way. Sometimes he's almost too honest, Padraig, I feel, even listening to him.
That's part of his charm.
But I think people have been so disrespectful. I absolutely loved it. I was so happy for him today. Because he's claimed all along, even when people were kind of sniggering and laughing, he always claimed, I'll win another big tournament. He was on Tubridy a few weeks ago and even he was suggesting that there's a big tournament in me, and people were kind of thinking, yeah, but is there really? And to see him do what he's done, and even the character he showed, I put a tweet out today, he has some pair of balls, Hugh.
He does.
Because after the 17th to go into the water, the silliest thing in the world to go into that water, now obviously a very difficult hole, but the character he showed to come back and birdie the 18th, it's unbelievable.
It is. Let's listen to the man himself. By the way, this win, over $1 million in prize money, but it's the prestige and what this does for him as well. He's gone from 297 in the world to 82. Here is Padraig Harrington after winning the Honda Classic today.
I was pretty keen on my own form at different stages, but I wasn't delivering. And, you know, I'd say the last... 2012, I played well, I put it very badly, had the yips, and yeah, it was tough after that, you know. Yeah, but last week I kind of found something in the mental game, which is what's been going wrong. So, you know, I kind of stuck with that this week. It worked half the time, sometimes it didn't work, but very happy with it. And you know, the one good thing for me is, like, I won in Indonesia, what, about, well, 5 tournaments ago, and I, believe it or not, when I get in contention, I can hit the shots. So the problem has been actually when I'm, you know, start of the week, middle of the road shots, easy shots, I'm just not hitting them. When I've got tough shots, I can hit them. So I wasn't afraid once I got myself, like, the last 9 holes, I felt like a different person, say, to when I was 9 under par.
You're a 3-time major champion, so you know what it's like to be in incredible form. How would you compare getting to the top of the world versus staying at the top of the world?
You do see some changes. God, even thinking about it, like, there's, you know, you kind of go from the penthouse down to the still pretty nice hotels, but yeah, no, there's no doubt on your way back down it's a lot different. But, you know, hopefully this isn't an isolated win. I hope not. You know, I really do believe in myself. As I said, I think I found that that mental edge that I've been lacking the last number of years, and you know, hopefully I'll be able to stick with that going forward and be consistently contending, because I know if I am contending, I can win.
Pádraig Harrington there, obviously delighted with himself. Gary Murphy, you must be very, very happy for a good friend of yours.
Good evening, you. Yeah, he's some vocal, isn't he?
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's always the same with him as well. It's just a roller coaster. I mean, you know, he gets in that one shot lead with two holes to go. You know, granted, 17 is a really tough par three and splash in the water, and here we go.
Mm.
And then just the, you know, and then the tee shot in 18 was kind of a byproduct of the push on 17, but just the putt on the last. I mean, I really didn't fancy him for it because, you know, I just thought maybe the golfing gods were against him a little bit because it's such an enormous comeback win, but just the courage to hold that putt in. And then he had another great putt in the playoff, and then his tee shot in 17 and the second time round was just sensational.
Unbelievable. I mean, even on the first playoff hole, so they played the 18th again, himself and Berger, and the two approach shots. And I said to Greg Allen at the time, I said, you know, he's given him the line here because he has to go first, obviously, he's further away, and he's given him the perfect line. And we could see that putt just move slightly to the left. Everyone thought it was going to break to the right, Gary. But then Berger set up over the same putt, which was a lot shorter. And I just thought, I kept waiting for it to break to the right, just didn't go.
Yeah, it was just a little bit of grain, which is the hard part about putting on those greens. But they both hit really good putts. But, I mean, the win means so much more to Harrington. I mean, Berger's only 21. He's probably still squeezing spots, but you know, Pádraig, it's a big win. I mean, it's 2013 since he's had a top 10 on the PGA Tour. It's 10 years since he's won a regular tour event.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's won the majors in between and that, but you know, and they're handy enough to win, I guess. But it is from, and you know, I said it earlier. I mean, Indonesia before Christmas was a huge performance. Pádraig is just better when his back is to the wall. I mean, he's just your ultimate underdog.
Mm. Do you remember where you won the first
there,
before?
He's better on the back nine because he stops thinking about all the shite he thinks about and just gets on with it and just plays. I mean, and he's such a winner. He's so brave and courageous. And I think he's such an intelligent fella. I think his mind just overloads. And once he gets a little bit bored, which happens in golf, I mean, it's hard. I mean, you wake up Thursday morning and you're trying to create the adrenaline at 7:30 on a Thursday morning that you need, you know, at kind of 4:00 on a Sunday afternoon. And that's why golf can be such a demanding sport at times. But once he narrows his mind, you see that with Garcia, like at the PGA, once he gets those mad eyes, that's it, he's done. You know, but it's just hard for him, I think, to recreate that environment in his head the whole time. But when he does, I mean, he's just, the focus is so much tighter and it's just great. I mean, it's a brilliant story. I mean, we're excited about Shane at the start of the season, having a top 10 or 7th place finish. You know, Rory obviously doing what Rory does because Rory's a genius and he's the best player on the planet by a stretch. But, I mean, Harrington is kind of, you know, he's the one Irish golfer that everyone just really clings to. I mean, he's such a great role model. He's so honest. I mean, people think that he talks so much, but he just, there's no cliches with Harrington. He just says it as it is, and he lets everybody in, and I think that's why we're all so fond of him. And to win is, I mean, that's the best field of the season on the PGA Tour this year.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you say Tiger's not there, but Tiger's a 4-handicapper at the moment, so count him out. But, I mean, Harrington has beaten the best field on the PGA Tour this season, and he's right back where he belongs, and it's, you know, he was on with us before Christmas. You know, he's 2,000 swings a day. He's been doing that in the wintertime.
When he laid up on
the first tie hole and he hit that shot, and it's an easy shot. It's only a 6-7 iron into position. And you can see him when he's looking at his right shoulder. He's just still working on stuff. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, that was exactly what I said. Looking at his shoulder there. He just had this finish at the end and he was looking right at his shoulder to see was he in the right alignment. It was amazing.
What was really funny, hi Gary, was the doing the stretches on the, just as the playoff was about to begin, and he's doing all these mad stretches. You can only imagine what's going through his head.
Yeah.
But he spoke there, Gary, about it not being an isolated win. Where do you think he can go from here?
Well, I mean, he's like the big difference now is that he's more in control. He hasn't been in control. I mean, he's been getting playing on invites and stuff, so he'd no real schedule. You got to chase after and play when you get in, a bit like Peter Lawrie has to do on the European Tour at the moment. But he can now go back to play his favourite tournaments. I mean, he's back to where he's fit as a fiddle. He's only 43, which is quite young for a golfer. And this will give him so much more confidence. The only thing this really does for him is he can play bad rounds now and make stupid mistakes and do bad stuff, and that's fine, because that happens. But he's got this win behind him now, and it will just give him that little bit of confidence that, you know, we all know in sport, it's all about the confidence thing, really.
There was a moment when he stood up on the tee box when they were just about to start the first playoff hole, which was the 18th, again, the par 5, and himself and Berger went to shake hands, and I'm just thinking, here it is, the rookie looking for his first win against the old-timer who's had the three major wins, looking for a way back to the top. And it's just sports gripped at its best, Gary.
But he's so ruthless in that environment. I remember a bloody 100 years ago, we were down in Spain on a coaching session. So we'd finished our golf in the morning with the afternoon off. We went on the beach. So we're on the beach messing around, just playing, kicking a bit of football. Harmless enough stuff, and he's going like a train through everybody. It's like, you calm down here. He's so aggressive, and he's such a great competitor. And
actually, if you look at
courage for him to hold that button, the 72nd hole, his mind must have been just buckled from what had just happened to him. It's a wonderful win, and it's great. He's been such a huge promoter for the Olympics and all that goes with it, and he's been 100 million miles away from that. And you know, he's back up to 80 in the world now, and he's back in the mix, and it's just great, great to see him back there.
Well, that handshake I talk about, you can see him reach out with his grip and actually pull Berger slightly towards him. If you watch it in slow motion, which they showed us,
he's trying to break one of his fingers.
Yeah, I'd say he was.
You know what he loved as well, what was really good as well? He looked like he was really enjoying it, Gary. There was loads of smiling and laughing and kind of as if he was really enjoying the moment.
Yeah, I think he gets a lot more instinctive and reactionary when he's in that environment. I think he obviously works on a lot in his game, and that's the way he does it. And I think hopefully this will put to bed, you know, a lot of people giving out about him, because that's just the way Patrick does it, isn't it? You know, and that's why he's been so successful.
Is he your greatest ever?
What?
Is he your greatest ever Irish sports person?
Well, I'm not saying when he's winning here, but I've said this before. I think undoubtedly think he is. I think Katie Taylor is an incredible ambassador for her sport. But golf is. I mean, Porrick's 297 in the world. Last week, the 297 guy ranked in the world won in LA. Golf is so competitive. There's so many great players out there. I think from that point of view, and the fact that it's an individual sport, obviously, which boxing is too. But I've said it previously. That Porrick's our greatest sportsman. I think Rory will go on to be, just because he's, I think, so gifted and obviously works so hard too. I think he will go on to be. But as it is right now, Harrington is he's numero uno in my eyes.
Gary, thanks a million. We're going to talk lots more about this tomorrow. Obviously, be in studio with me. But for the moment, thanks a million.
See you, Gary.
See you, lads. Don't forget to mention Liverpool tonight now.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to give Mr. Cawley a tough time here. Absolutely. Nice one, Gary. Thanks a million.
Cheers.
Gary Murphy there. Hi, lads. People forget that Harrington was the first European to win a major on American soil when he won the PGA. Good few years ago now. Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Hugh. Great time to be part of Irish sport at the moment, with the rugby team beating the old enemy, the cricket team playing so well, and Harrington winning today. Never seen Sky Sports News talking so much about Irish people. Loving it, says John in Kildare. John O'Regan on Twitter says, back-to-back Open champion as well as the USPGA, now the Honda Classic, no question, the best sportsman we have produced. And another person on Twitter says, Brian O'Driscoll.
I have
Sheehan O'Reilly.
I have Bod and Roy Keane and Harrington are my three.
Katie?
I don't know. I don't have her in the top three.
Get out of my studio. Boys, I told you when Porrick was last on the show, only 20 golfers in the history of the game have more majors. The boy on and off the course is pure class. There's another. Great to see Porrick Harrington winning again. He's a true champion on and off the course. Well done to the Irish rugby team too, led by another giant of Irish sport, Paul O'Connell. As a Kildare man, it's time for Jason Ryan to be sacked. It was the team in rag order, and the results under his management are abysmal. But well done to Westmeath, Stephen Bulger. Yeah, Stephen, it's an interesting one. I can't work out you know, I think Jason Ryan is a really good coach. He's a really good guy, good manager. I can't work out what's going on in Kildare at the moment, but you'd imagine they have to get their act together pretty soon.
See that text you, Stephen is praising everyone to the highest, and then bang, the nail, the final nail in the coffin. He's praising Harrington, O'Connell, yeah. All great, and then poor Jason
Ryan. Jason Ryan. Poor Jason. And here's one for you from Adrian in Wexford. Howdy lads, I texted into the show a month ago telling Coley that Liverpool would finish in the top four. He promised to sing You'll Never Walk Alone on air. Start learning the lines, Coley.
When?
He has you there.
He definitely has me, yeah. I agree totally, Adrian. I think they will finish in the top four, and as I said, I'm a man of my word to you, I'll sing that song.
No disrespect to Harrington, says Philip Keane on Twitter, but how can he win three majors so close to each other and not become world number one? Was he just lucky? No, because Tiger Woods was winning every single golf tournament there was. That's why. Mickelson as well was up there. So I think that's why the golf point system as well, it's a bit skewed. You know, you really have to be dominating for such a long time. We're just asking basically, at Game On 2FM on Twitter, is Padraig Harrington the greatest ever Irish sports person? Keep him coming in. 51552 for your text. Now, rugby. And I just want to read out quick competition that Against the Head are running on the television, of course. Pretty amazing prize too. If your club or school needs some straight talking help, listen up right now. Against the Head and Rabo Direct are offering clubs and schools of all levels the opportunity to win a Rabo Direct specialist coaching session with two of Ireland's highest rated professional coaches, Bernard Jackman and Alan Quinlan. The Rabo Direct specialist coaching session will be filmed on location at the winning club or school by an RTE TV crew. The session will be edited into a segment featuring not only the best parts of the session but also some historical background information on the club and aired on Against the Head. So to enter this, all we want you to do is make a short video piece letting us know why you need the specialist at your local club or school, and then post your video on the wall of the RTE Rugby Facebook page, or post your video to a link to your video on Twitter and include the @RTE Rugby handle in the tweet, and the winning videos will be picked by the coaches involved. Okay, that's that. We're staying with rugby because obviously it was an incredible victory for Ireland against England at the Aviva yesterday. It brings them up to number 3 in the IRB world rankings, and I'm delighted to say that Donal Lennon joins us in studio.
Thank you, Hugh.
Listen, your thoughts yesterday, obviously your commentary duty at the Aviva Stadium, what must have been an incredible atmosphere, and the performance by Ireland. How impressed were you by what you saw?
I thought it was an outstanding performance. I mean, this is a very good England side, and you know, everybody before the game were talking about narrow margins, and 54 minutes, Ireland are 19-3 up. They're just an incredible side. Their error count is practically zero. Very controlled in everything they do. They're patient, efficient, and just the clarity, I think, everybody just so certain of their roles. I think they're a joy to watch. And, you know, England, they knew, for example, the kicking game. You'd seen everything. The pictures from Penny Hill Park were Jack Noel, Alex Goode, all standing under high balls. They knew what was coming. And yet, in the first 5 minutes, Watson dropped one. Ford dropped one. And you could almost see the young fellas in that England backline who are good players. I think England have the nucleus of a very good backline, but you could see, you just can't replicate the type of intensity and atmosphere, because it was a great atmosphere in training. You got to experience the real thing. And you know, while, as I say, I think Ford, young player, I thought he performed really well under pressure. Give him another year or two and he'll be outstanding. And you know, the one thing struck me afterwards, when you looked at Watson, Joseph taking off, he's probably been the star of the Six Nations, didn't have a great game. Mm. And Ford, what he went through, Leinster could get the backlash because they've come to the Aviva, they've now seen the intensity that Irish teams bring. They'll be back here, of course, with Bath in the quarterfinal of the Champions Cup. So, you know, that'll make it interesting. But, you know, from an Irish perspective, I thought Ireland were outstanding. Under a bit of pressure again towards the end of the game, but that's not a bad thing because it dampens expectations maybe a little bit, because everybody was focused on the England game. Oh, win that one and they have a great chance of a Grand Slam. Mm. But I think they have an even bigger challenge now. Like, that was a bad result for Ireland in Paris. I know you were there. It would have suited Ireland far better had France won that one. Mm. Wales are now rejuvenated. I don't care how bad France are. Any side that wins in the Stade de France comes out of it feeling a few feet taller. And I think that'll stand to Wales.
And we'll come back to that in just a minute. I suppose your point there about Stuart Lancaster, as you said, he knew what was coming. He knew what Ireland were going to do. And it says something about the precision and the skill levels that Ireland are able to execute at, that if the opposition team knows your tactics and still cannot get a handle on you, it says a huge amount about Ireland.
Yeah, it does. I suppose, you know, they don't face that every week. So you can't, you know, it just goes to show you can't just train to receive that type of punishment for 3-4 sessions. It's something you've got to experience a few times. But you're right. I mean, it is the precision of the kicks from Sexton, from Conor Murray, who took over the mantle, if you like, from Sexton when he had to go off on 55 minutes. That augurs well for the future as well, even though Sexton is the key player. We've seen other players have come and gone. The likes of Heaslip have been injured, O'Brien has been injured, O'Driscoll is retired, but others have come in and they've done the job. But Sexton is the one that makes Ireland tick. And, you know, so that hamstring injury is a concern, but thankfully today the news is a bit more promising and it looks as if he will be available for Cardiff, which is vital.
I mean, you mentioned himself and Conor Murray, their partnership. It's as if they've been playing together week in, week out at club for years, yet that hasn't been the case. They just seem to have this understanding of each other now and their game plan complements each other so well.
Yeah, it does. It took a while for it to gel. I mean, Conor came from nowhere, if you remember, going back to the 2011 World Cup. I think a key element was actually the Lions tour. When you're away for 8 weeks and you get a chance, you're training together every day. I think it brought, I think Conor learned a lot on the tour anyway, but also I think training with Sexton 6 days a week for 7 weeks gave him a greater understanding. Like, Ireland would never be away on a tour for that length of time. So I think that proved hugely beneficial. On two fronts. Firstly, the fact that they had so much time together. But secondly, the fact that Conor Murray went on that trip as number three behind Mike Phillips and Ben Youngs. But by the end of the tour, arguably, he was number one. I know he came on as a sub in the third test, played a vital role. But I think if there was a fourth test, he would have been the number one.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, maybe for casual rugby fans who mightn't have seen an awful lot of Robbie Henshaw before, they would have left the Aviva or left their television sets with his name firmly imprinted on their mind because he was ferocious in everything he did.
A phenomenal performance. People, I think, didn't appreciate the workload that he put in over the 80 minutes. He actually went down with an ankle injury in the first half and he was very doubtful. They were looking to take him off at one stage, but there was concerns about Sexton and also, well, Jarrad Payne got injured later in the game. But, I mean, his work rate, tis the, you know, I suppose, stuff you don't see on the television. His work rate in terms of clearing out rucks, once again, 13 tackles, the highest of any Irish player, I think jointly with Tommy O'Donnell, who, given that he only came on after 24 minutes, again, another performance, a phenomenal performance from him. But Henshaw, you must remember, I think what makes his performance even better, he's played very little rugby as inside centre. He took on the mantle of Jamie Roberts a number of times in terms of getting Ireland over the gain line. Without the ball, his defence is spectacular. He's now bossing other players. You can see him telling fellas, get in. Like, this fella's only 22. And then, of course, the try. I mean, the execution there. The way he kept himself in play, not being forced over the touchline.
Yeah.
The way he led with his shoulder and he kind of forced Good out of the way was phenomenal. And I think yesterday's performance is a sort of a benchmark for him. Every time he goes out, he looks more confident at this level. I think playing alongside Sexton, and to be fair, Jarrad Payne is a very experienced campaigner. He's played a lot of Super Rugby in New Zealand. He's a very experienced player. So I think it's a different dynamic for him coming in at 28 or 29 years of age to a young fella coming in, because he would have been in played with a huge number of All Blacks over the years in New Zealand rugby. And he brings a sort of an understated composure, if you like. And as a partnership, I think they're doing extremely well together. But Henshaw, you know, he has a fantastic future.
Looks like a real star. In terms of, massive credit has to go to Mike Ross. I mean, 5 weeks ago, Donald, people questioned whether he had any future in the game. Now, Joe Schmidt stuck with him. He stuck with him when there were calls from everywhere, perhaps to give Martin Moore a go. And he came in against a guy who has turned him inside out only 2 months ago, and he held, more than held his own.
Well, I thought he was the unsung hero yesterday. And there's no question that England would have targeted the scrum. They would have expected a dominance in that area coming into the game. And it never materialised. And that was one of the things I really admired about Ireland. They negated England's strength and they exposed their weaknesses.
Ross,
as you say, I mean, if the scrum had gone badly, regardless of whether it was his fault or not, he was going to be the one that was taking the flak. No other way about it.
Exactly.
And while it was a brilliant collective performance from the front five, Ross was outstanding. And I think it was even highlighted because when Marty Moore came in, he did really well around the field. He cleared out a huge amount of rucks, but he was under pressure in the scrum.
Hmm.
So Ross has, you know, he's gone from a situation a couple of weeks ago where he wasn't even on the bench for Leinster in the Champions Cup. Tadhg Furlong had come in ahead of him there, to a stage where Leinster have to start him against Bath.
I suppose it just goes to show you as well, particularly for a prop, if you have a situation where you know somebody's got the better of you, you can study and learn and say, right, this is what I did wrong, this is what he did well. And it is a position, it's not just about pure strength, where you can correct your technique to allow for your opponent.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. But also, Ross is the kind of guy, like he's an anorak on the scrum.
Mm.
So it's almost, and he's a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
So it's almost a challenge to him, okay, I got caught the last time. He would have been working out and analysing and thinking, the next time I meet him, what is he going to present and how do I counter that?
Mm.
But Ross has a track record over the years of, if he gets into difficulty in a game, and every prop gets caught once or twice in a game, he has the capacity to work it out. And that's what separates him from others. Others aren't able to resolve the problems on the field. They'd have to go back to their scrum coach and sit with him for a week before they'd resolve it. Ross has the capacity to do that.
Do you remember the Heineken Cup final in Northampton? He was under an awful time and he managed to just completely turn things around.
Absolutely. I think they went in, they just changed the height of the scrum and their address on the day. So look, there is huge credit due to him, because he knew in the back of his head, if he didn't perform there and against South Africa, he was gone. So look, he's in a good place, and that's good because you know, probably up against Gethin Jenkins now in Wales.
Yeah.
So he's in a good place, and he's got more game time as well, which is a key for a prop. I always feel a prop, he's one that's the one position where you need to play week in, week out. I remember John Hayes years ago didn't want to take a break because he felt if he was out of the game for 2 or 3 weeks, it would take him 2 or 3 weeks to get back up running again.
Yeah.
So, and by virtue of the fact that Ross wasn't getting a huge amount of game time, he had a lot of injuries as well before those games against Harlequin, so he didn't have a huge amount of game time going into those sequence of games. So I think that was a contributory factor in the problems that he had that time as well.
Okay. The two W's, Wales and Warren Gatland. We have a history of just when we think everything is going great, and we can think back to 2011 at the World Cup, the quarterfinals, nobody gave Wales much of a chance. Warren Gatland, you know, he has a history of doing Ireland. It'll be a tough game, Donal.
Huge game, because Wales, despite the dominance of Irish provinces over the Welsh have no inhibitions when it comes to playing Ireland.
Mm.
They know the Irish players inside out because, you know, the Ireland and Wales were probably the two biggest contributors to that Lions tour over, it's only 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, the memories there will be fresh for everybody. Gatland knows the Irish players inside out. Sean Edwards has a huge history in terms of preparing teams against Irish opposition. And Wales, to their credit, and Gatland in particular, has always been good at sort of reversing an area of uncertainty. Like when they lost that opening game to England,
yeah,
they were under severe pressure and they faced two away games. Scotland were arguably playing better in the first two games. Like, they were shocking last weekend, yeah, let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
But they could have won that game against Wales
easily.
Wales stuck in there and then they went to Paris, and personally I thought France were better against Wales than they were against Ireland. I thought they were more creative behind the scrum, so they offered more, but Wales were able to absorb that pressure and come back and stay in the game. And I think players like Dan Biggar, Jamie Roberts, Jonathan Davies were more influential. George North had an excellent game. More influential maybe than we've seen them. I think Wales, because a lot of their players don't play a lot of high intensity rugby in the Pro 12.
They've more to give.
That's one thing, but it takes them a while to get up to the level of international rugby.
Mm.
So given that this is their fourth game now in the championship, you could say I thought they kind of stepped up a big level against France, and I think that's going to be a factor in Cardiff.
And of course, those names that you mentioned, Dan Biggar, Jamie Roberts, George North, even Lee Halfpenny, the one thing you can say is they will compete with Ireland in that high ball.
They're brilliant at it. They're as good as we are. Mm. I mean, we've seen Bigger retrieve three or four of his own kicks.
Yeah.
Jamie Roberts, I remember one or two spectacular retakes. But you're there at 6'3", 6'4". North is 6'4". I wonder will he bring... Well, Cuthbert is 6'6", but Liam Williams is also a fullback by trade. So he's excellent in the air. So they're actually good in an area that Ireland have excelled in. So I think they'll relish that challenge.
It'll be a fascinating battle.
Yeah, it'll be brilliant. And, you know, on the back of the England game, really looking forward to the England game. The fact that you have another equally massive game to look forward to now. Thrilled that Ireland have 2 weeks to build for it because... as we know, a lot of bangs, bruises, injuries. But I also think, given the emotional energy that Ireland had to put in to beat in England,
they need a
break. They had to play them next Saturday, I think they'd find it difficult to get up to that level again.
Mm.
Just the extra week makes a big difference.
Okay. Well, look, it'll be interesting to see how those bumps and bruises heal for the moment. Donal, thanks a million.
Cheers, Hugh.
Donal Lennon there. Yeah, keep your texts coming in, 51552, and your tweets at GameOn2FM. We're asking who, after Patrick Harrington's win today, is he the greatest Irish sports person ever? And if he isn't, who is? Niamh Barry says, Roy Keane, definitely.
I agree with Niamh.
Nathan Maxwell says, Gary Breen, definitely. I agree with Nathan. He is the best. Mentally, golf is the toughest game. He's 100-1 for the Masters, so he's worth the punt, says Owen Murphy. I'd be very surprised if he was 100-1 because he hasn't qualified for the Masters this year. He needs to win two PGA Tour events between now and then. He's won one today, obviously. He needs to win another one, I think, to qualify, because only the top 50 in the world automatically get in. So I think 100-1 isn't great, considering he needs to win another one. You might ask Eamon, like him or loathe him, what John Terry has done for Chelsea and achieved with Chelsea is up there with any captain or any club of any era. Special mention to Petr Cech, who was surely one of the greatest pros in the Premiership era. Even a media dominated by various type of reds can't disagree with that, says Colm in Wexford. Would you agree with that?
Eamon loves John Terry anyway, so he'll be full of praise for him.
Okay, we'll put that to him later on. Kieran O'Brien on Twitter says, yes, 100% longevity and success in truly global sport, and all done with utter class. Very well put. Declan says, Sean Kelly, considered one of the all-time greats within his sport. Google top road cyclists of all time. He's in most top tens on Twitter. IrelandGolfBalls.ie says, two great quotes from Gary Murphy on Game On. Burger's still squeezing spots and Tiger's a four handicapper. Sonny O'Sullivan, the best ever, is another one. Well, lads, you're not disrespecting a very famous Irish athlete, Sonny O'Sullivan, by not mentioning her in the top three, says John from Monaghan. I think she'd be in an awful lot of people's top three, just not the two people sitting in this room. And it's all opinion, I suppose. Can't wait to hear what the new Eamon Dunphy, a.k.a. Alan Cawley, has to say this week.
Better looking, Jamie.
PH is the best ever. Are you joking? Sean Kelly is regarded as one of the best bike riders in the world ever. Will you start living in the real world, lads, for fuck's sake, says Bill in Wexford.
Ah, cheer up, Bill.
Calm down, Bill. AP Coy is the best by miles, says another. Yeah, wouldn't be too many disagreement with that. World Championship gold, European gold, Olympic silver, cross-country gold in long and short course on the same day. Sonny O'Sullivan, Ireland's best for me, says Vinny in Mayo. Well put. Whoever said that Patrick Harrington was the first European major winner in the US has forgotten Lyle, Woosnam, Faldo, to name three before him. Harry is one of the greatest Irish sportsmen, says Gus in Nace.
We're not a bad little country, are we, Hugh?
Yeah.
When you look at these names...
Although we've had a text in, Aidan O'Brien, question mark. This is from PFIN. How can Patrick Harrington be the greatest sports person when he's not even the best golfer? I don't get that. The greatest Irish sports person. We're saying he is the best Irish golfer.
Yeah. Well,
I don't understand that one.
Aidan O'Brien, yeah, he's worth a mention. I love Aidan O'Brien.
Michael Smith. Who's Michael Smith? Does it mean Michelle Smith? Well, yeah. I'm not even going to dignify that with an answer, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Michael Smith. Right. Okay. The news confirmed earlier today by the IRFU that Ireland has put in a bid to host the Women's World Cup in 2017. And the matches would take place in UCD and then move to Queen's University and then Ravenhill for the semi-finals and the final. It's a pretty massive thing, I suppose, if it does come to pass, in conjunction with their bid that's also going in for the World Cup in 2023. So to host two major tournaments in the space of, what, 6 years would be massive for the country. But this one first up, let's get the thoughts now of the Chief Executive of the IRFU, Mr. Philip Brown. This is what he had to say earlier today.
The growth of the women's game has been immense, really, over the last 10-12 years. If we go back to 2003, I think we had 500 women playing the game and about 31 teams. We now have 4,000 playing the game and 118 teams, so it's just pretty phenomenal growth. And I suppose the other motivating factor has been the success of the Irish women's team over the last couple of years. Obviously, they won the Grand Slam in 2013 and got to the semi-final of the Women's World Cup last year. So all of those things come together to really make a pretty significant impression on us in terms of what do we need to do to try and support the women's game here. And obviously the easiest thing for us to do is to actually put them in the shop window in terms of the Women's World Cup here in Ireland, and that's really what we're at.
Philip Brown there speaking earlier today. Just on that, hi Hugh, breaking news: Ireland's women rugby team beat the world champions on Friday. Might please tell everyone in RTE. Willie, we had the game live on Game On Friday night. You don't need to tell us.
We were there, Willie. We were there.
Down in Ashburn, live on this very programme.
I know, we've got all the games live.
Yeah. And it was a fantastic win. And, you know, full credit to them. I will say that England were missing a few sevens players. I'm not diluting the achievement at all. But I think even if you asked Tom Tierney, the head coach, he'd say, look, they weren't at full strength. But it was a massive, massive win for them. And back on track after that defeat to France means they can still now go and win this championship, depending on what happens. England obviously still have to play France. That's a massive one. But yeah, fantastic win. OK, we're going to talk to Eamon Dunphy. Alan Colley is staying with me. Keep your text coming in, 51552. Back after these.
Get your game face on.
Game on 2FM.
Apologies about that, because we owe a listener an apology.
No, you do.
No, we do.
No, you do.
If we're good together, we're bad together, okay?
Okay, I'm with you.
Harrington does qualify for the Masters. He does get in. I thought he had to win twice. Greg has just confirmed with Doug Ferguson. He does get into the Masters.
Yeah, when you were explaining it there, I wasn't sure, but I would have always thought once you win a tournament on the tour, that qualifies you for the majors.
Yeah.
So, by all accounts, Greg has confirmed it for us. He's in.
That's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So we have McDowell, Shane Lowry, Patrick Harrington.
Brilliant.
Eamon Dunphy, what did you make of Harrington's win today?
I thought it was extraordinary. I watched it. I didn't back him. I backed all the other guys who were there.
I backed him, Eamon.
I did, you? Well, yeah. Done. Well, after, you know, he dropped shots last night, and he was only four shots behind, but he was missing short putts. He looked unhappy with himself. But the young guy that he beat in the playoff, I backed at 45-1 this morning.
Oh, God.
I had Patrick Reed, and I had Poulter.
Oh, my God.
So I was all green on the screen, except for Harrington. But it's a great day for Ireland.
Where would you put this, Eamon? I mean, you know, to come back and do this after a lot of people wrote him off, you know, he questioned whether he'd ever hit the heights that he hit when he won those majors, when he was in that kind of form. And to do this in what was a massive tournament, it's a pretty phenomenal achievement.
It is a phenomenal achievement. He played some really good iron shots. He holds some amazing putts under pressure. Not least the one at the last, you know, to get into a playoff for a birdie from 15 or 18 feet. So it's an extraordinary tribute to his, you know, professionalism and his dedication and his belief. I mean, he's always been a dangerous player when he's near the top of the leaderboard. It's a very, very long time. And to be honest, I never thought he'd win a tournament of that caliber again. But I'm delighted he's back.
Okay.
It's great. You know, it's fantastic.
Here's a conclusion that a football fan could arrive at following the weekend's games, Eamon. And this is that neither Manuel Pellegrini nor Louis van Gaal have the first clue what they're doing.
Well, I think in the case, they're separate cases. In the case of Pellegrini, he's been landed with players he hasn't bought. And they're terrible. I mean, Mangala is the most expensive defender in the world. If I'm not mistaken, they bought him from Benfica. He's just awful. Vincent Kompany is having a nervous breakdown trying to mind him. and it's a full-on nervous breakdown. We saw Fernandinho in the World Cup for Brazil. He's useless. It's hard to believe he's a Brazilian. I'd like to see his passport. But they have some pretty, you know, the bottom line is Liverpool wanted it more. They were more disciplined. They were more of a team. City are not a team. Yaya Toure packed it in yesterday at halftime.
Yeah.
You know, he's been a very celebrated player by lots of, you know, he's never been a real trier. And Nasri in midfield, you know, he's been banned from the French team by Didier Deschamps because of his indiscipline and his attitude. So that's what they've spent their money on. And so for Pellegrini, it's very, very difficult. I think he does know his stuff, and I admire his character, if you like, He's a charming man. But if you have to manage a club with those expectations, after that money's been spent, and you're not managing with the players that you selected, then you're in big trouble. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. Van Gaal, I think, is, you know, it's inexplicable, really, Hugh. I mean, he has got a CV, but I think he went to those clubs when they had the best players in the league and just, you know, somehow. But he never lasted. Even after he won Champions League with Ajax, with Bayern Munich and Barcelona, he never lasted at those places. So I think he's, you know, he's mad, actually. Talking about players have to forget about their intuition. Well, I mean, if you tell Lionel Messi to forget about his intuition, what's left?
Yeah.
That's what he is. That's what great soccer players are. They're intuitive animals. George Best, Maradona, Pele, Messi, Ronaldo. You know, if you tell them it's a game of chess now, boys, you know, forget it. And that's what he's effectively done at United.
Alan, I mean, United were booed by their own fans at certain stages against Sunderland. They won the match 2-0. Mm-hmm. Di Maria looked completely lost, like he didn't know what he was doing. Every time they got the ball, and the fans were shouting, attack, just go forward. But the ball was passed to the side, it was passed behind them. And, you know, Wayne Rooney, all of a sudden, you know, Van Gaal realises, hang on, this guy isn't bad up front, I'll put him up there, he scores two goals. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we've been saying it all along, Hugh. We're kind of almost... It's at the stage now where we're almost repeating ourselves week in, week out with Van Gaal, you know, it really is. And we've been calling out for Rooney to play up front all season, and that's where he should be playing, and build your team around Rooney, your best player. I feel a little bit for Di Maria because he looks totally disillusioned with what's going on at the moment. He's gone from sunny Madrid playing with Ronaldo and the best players in the world to playing with Rojo and Smalling, and he's wondering what the hell is going on here. He looks just disillusioned. But the big game for me over the weekend was the City-Liverpool game.
How good were Liverpool?
I thought Liverpool were absolutely brilliant. And I'd love to praise Brendan Rodgers because, to be fair to him, Hugh, if you lose, we're talking about the greatest Irish sports people. He had the best player, probably one of the best players in England last year, Suarez. And you take him out of a team. He also had Sturridge, who was very good. So he was starting off the season with two of the best players gone. That would be a struggle for any manager of any team, no matter who you have. It's like taking Messi out of Barcelona, Ronaldo out of Madrid, whoever it may be. He was under serious pressure when he was trying to integrate new players into the squad. People were questioning the signings. And he's turned the whole thing around. And looking at them yesterday, you're talking about Pellegrini, a man, and players swanning around, Nasri, Silva, and I love Silva, Yaya Toure, no interest in defending. You look at how much them Liverpool players ran their hearts out yesterday, added in with a bit of quality with Coutinho and Lallana and these fellas, and I thought Liverpool were absolutely brilliant yesterday.
Eamon, those players, as exactly as Alan said there, and I have it written down, they bursted a gut for their manager yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And they have been doing that for, you know, for the last 2 or 3 months. And also, Steven Gerrard wasn't playing, you know, and I think we're in a post-Gerrard era now. And he's been a great player for Liverpool. But I think Rodgers is vindicated. I said, and many other people said, he'd be done in by the buys that came into the club in the summer. But Chan has come good. And... maybe Coutinho, I think, was always a, you know, potentially top player, and he's getting stronger now, and he's taken control of games from midfield, and he has the confidence to do that.
He looks fitter as well, doesn't he?
He looks fitter and stronger. He's only a kid; he's 21, I think. So
it's crazy to think, Eamon, imagine he wasn't good enough for the Brazilian squad when you see how bad they were in the summer in the World Cup.
Yeah, well, Fernandinho was in his position, so. Midfield, you know, I mean, a lot of things about Brazil were wrong, you know, but I think Liverpool have done brilliantly. They still need a couple of defenders because they look shaky at the back, but the quality that they showed yesterday, could have had a couple of more goals. Sterling missed a sitter, and Sturridge is not quite there yet fitness wise, but I think they've got a real chance of getting in the top four now. They play really the game the way it should be played. And I think Rodgers deserves the credit. And for City, I think Pellegrini will pay a price. They might get a right hiding in Barcelona as well, because they won't get the ball and they won't try. And Toure won't. They simply, you know, they won't try. So I think Pellegrini may pay the price, but it just goes to show that people come in with billions, and then who do they hire? I mean, who's advising them? Who's buying the players? It's crazy. They need to go and get Simeone from Atletico Madrid And he'll build a club there, and there won't be any Yaya Touré in Simeone's team, I can tell you.
Yeah, I mean, Alan, just on City, I mean, the likes of Yaya Touré, you know, that story about the birthday cake, I know it's been well repeated now, but, you know, when you have someone who's of that kind of mindset, that immaturity, that if a club don't give him a birthday cake, he wants to leave, yeah. Supposedly. You know, someone like Nasri, who just moans the whole time, gives out about everything, can't get into the French cause because of his attitude, yeah. Not because of his skill.
Yeah.
There's serious problems in that club.
Of course there is, and that comes back then, you'd have to say, to the manager, Hugh. And the big thing, I like Pellegrini, he comes across really well in his interviews, very dignified person. You know my feelings on the other fellow who manages Chelsea, and he's the complete opposite Pellegrini. He's a really decent man, he seems, but I have to say he slipped up massively this week in the two games, because he went into the game against Barcelona with two midfield, absolute suicide against Barcelona, and for that to happen, Hugh, then he goes to Anfield, one of the hardest places to go as well, and he does the exact same thing with two in the midfield. And it's okay if you're playing with two who might be kind of considered workers, but you're looking at Yaya Toure playing alongside Fernandinho, gave no protection to the back four, then you have two wide men, Silva and Nasri, who have no interest, their shape is all over the place, no interest in defending. And I thought Pellegrini made a massive boo-boo, and as Eamon said, I think he'll pay the price massively for at the end of the season.
And just looking at the form since Christmas, Eamon, before we leave it, because we're just out of time unfortunately, but I mean, Liverpool, they've played 10, they've 26 points, it's the highest, the best form team from the last game, 10 games in the Premier League, behind them Arsenal and then Chelsea and Spurs. Liverpool, if they keep it going, they'll get top four.
Yeah, I think I'd like to see them get top four, and I think Brendan Rodgers said it would be a greater achievement to get top four this year than it was to contend for the championship last year, and I'd agree with that. You've got to be careful about unbeaten runs in the Premier League, because there's an awful lot of deadwood in it, but I hope they do. At the moment, United are in the top four spot, but they've got big games and big teams to play, and that's a story well worth watching.
Okay, alright, listen, Eamon, thanks so much for your time. We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk to you next Monday. As always, Eamon Dunphy there. Eamon. Keep your text coming in, 51552, back after these. We've had a tweet in from Falemi saying, how can you not have Tony McCoy in the top three? Jokers. Alan?
Tony McCoy is a legend, but he wouldn't lace Ruby Walsh's boots, let's be honest.
Okay, we're going to move on talking Gaelic games. Yesterday, Westmeath got their first ever league win against Kildare, 15 points to 12 in Newbridge. Former All-Star Gary Connaughton was back in a Westmeath jersey for the game, and he joins us on the line now. Gary, you're very welcome.
Hello, Hugh. How are things?
Very good. How's the body after yesterday?
Oh, the body is sore, all right, for sure. Look, it'll get through again, another week of it again, sure. It's great to be back again playing anyway, so it was enjoyable yesterday to win. Like, you know, it was a venue I've never won before, and I've got a few spankings there in the last few years there, but thankfully we pulled through yesterday and got a great win, so it's roll on next Saturday night when we're playing our old foes Meath again now, so look forward to that as well.
And I saw today Tom actually didn't realise the significance of the win until you told him afterwards.
Yeah, like someone told me during the week there that we never beaten Kildare ever in the league, and Kildare are the only county that I've played against in Leinster that I've never won either league or a Burn Cup or Championship, so Yes, it was great to win yesterday. Now, you know, I know the conditions weren't great at the start of the game with the snow that fell and all that, but once we got the warm-up done, it was grand, the pitch was perfect, and we just got stuck into it from the start, and like, we've got good young lads here now, and they're working hard, and we got a result at the end, and, you know, Dennis Lennon showed his qualities up front, and John Heston around the middle of the field, you know, and so it was a good team, all-around team performance, all right.
We spoke to Desi Dolan recently enough, and he said the same thing, that he just felt there was a unity back in the squad that maybe, I suppose, when that run was going on last year, and there was a little bit of doom and gloom about it, he felt that there was a couple of big performances in this Westmead panel. Would you see that as well in training for yourself over the last while?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I know last year didn't go well. Division 1 was probably a step too far for the Westmeath lads, and they kind of, you know, they drained the confidence down going into the Championship and all that. And when Tom took over there, you know, he got in a backroom team there straight away, like, you know, that was going to work with the players off the pitch as well as on the pitch. Like, and I think the biggest addition to his backroom team has been Gerry Duffy. He's people would have known him from the marathon. He ran 32 marathons in 32 days. He's an inspirational speaker there, going around the country there, and he's involved with us at the moment now, and he's been a huge addition there, getting the players' minds and focus right off the pitch now. And you know, a lot of sport is to do with how mentally you are right going into the games. Like, you know, a lot of lads, you know, a lot of them, the younger lads, like, they haven't really won anything as such with Westmeath under 21 or minor. So mentally, they're probably going to be saying that they haven't the belief in themselves to win it. But, you know, in fairness to Gerry Duffy, you know, he's getting their heads focused now. And, you know, I know we've only won two games in the Burn Cup and two games in the league, but it's a great start to the year now. And, you know, it's what you do in the Championship that's going to be judged on now. So hopefully we can get a good run going for the championship and get confidence built up for the championship, you know.
And you're very much a part of that as well, Gary, from what I'm hearing, anecdotally as well, that your influence in the dressing room as well. And now to have you back, I suppose, and playing so well yesterday, I mean, that was an incredible performance you put in.
Well, it's just, you know, like as Davy Fitzgerald used to say when he was in goals for the Clare Hurlers, they're like, you know, you're the hero one week and getting all the claps in the back, and the next week you could be the villain, like, so you just take it a pinch of salt there, like, but yeah, exactly, it was enjoyable to get the win there yesterday, you know, and, you know, the things went right for me, like, sometimes then shots go top corners or bottom corners, you have no chance of saving them, but yesterday they kind of just worked well, and, you know, it was nice game to win anyway, you know.
You'd be a very hard man to drop after that.
Oh, well, fairness, our younger keeper, Darren, he's injured there, he's a problem with his quad there, and he's out for next weekend as well now, so I probably announced the retirement for the third or fourth time on the next Saturday night after the meat game again.
Well, Tom mentioned the year and a half put on a few extra pounds might have helped you keep out a few of the shots there yesterday as well.
Probably did, all right. Yeah, you know, you can fill up the goal a bit too. A few Guinnesses there over the last year, you know, could have filled up the goal a bit better, and all right. Yeah, but I know it was nice to get the. I didn't think playing with Westmeath again, but you know, a lot of people retire and from sport and they don't get called back. But it was nice to be asked back and asked to tug out. But I was training away with soccer, a junior soccer club, before Christmas there, and it kind of kept the weight down, kept me a bit sharp. So when I came back training in January, then it wasn't too bad, like, you know.
Well, you'd be long enough where you physically will not be able to do it, Gary. So you might, you know, if you're putting in performances like that, you might as well go until the body completely gives up.
That's what most people say. Like, you know, you'll be long enough not playing it, then, you know, than playing it. Like, so, like, you know, I was just look. I must do and take one game at a time now. You know, I don't know how long, whether I last the whole year playing goals or what. It was. Next weekend I'll be playing again against Meath now, so if that could tell a tale, it could get spanking up here now, but
not at all.
Anyway, you know.
Not at all. Look, it's been brilliant to talk to you. Sorry we didn't have more time, Gary, but we might get you on again later on in the season. And best of luck against Meath next weekend.
Thanks very much, Hugh. Yep.
Super stuff. Gary Conlon there. Okay. Yeah, former All-Star, legend in Westmeath, and a brilliant, brilliant performance yesterday to beat Kildare, and the serious problems going on there. We might revisit that next week. Hugh, my dig was at TV, not to you or Alan. Absolutely love your show, Willie Menrath. Ah, yeah, we're only kind of having a laugh, Willie.
We're all friends, Willie. We're all friends around here.
Yeah, 51542. Thanks for all your texts and tweets, by the way. We will try and get to some tomorrow, and we might just keep this going, develop it on a bit. We've got Gary Murphy coming in the studio. You're coming in for a League of Ireland preview as well.
Yep.
League of Ireland fans, tomorrow night, game on. Don't miss it, 7 o'clock.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.